We are back on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. A lot still to get to on the program, including your questions in the mailbag. Do want to tell you before we get to Yannick Hansen here, it is Food Bank Friday, and so far as of 4:30, we have raised $62,080 thanks to some of your great work to help us support the Greater Vancouver Food Bank. But we still have an hour and a half to go. That means we can still get some more donations in, as we're getting matches from some very generous donors all the way up to $25,000 for their matches. So we still got a bit of a ways to go here that we can really increase this and really help some families out during this time of year.
So. Yeah, they're willing to match. So let's get them to the full match. They're willing to do so. And, you know, times are very difficult for a lot of people right now in these economic times. And if you can help, every little bit is going to go a long way, especially right now. The food banks, as we've heard across the country, have been really hit hard too, because there are a lot of people that are in need right now. So whatever you can do is especially important this year. So thank you for even considering it.
So the ways that you can donate, two ways. There is a link up at sportsnet.ca/650, and you can find the secure online portal to donate that way. But also, and this is super easy, I've seen some of our listeners already post pictures of how they've done it as well on message. You just text a carrot emoji to 30333 to donate your choice of $5, $10, or $25. And that's the easiest way you can possibly give in our push for the Greater Vancouver Food Bank. So get those donations in if you can, as we are trying to help as many as we can at the Greater Vancouver Food Bank. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Let's bring in our next guest. He joins us every single Friday here on Canucks Central. It is Yannick Hansen, and this analyst brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford, on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Thanks for this, Yannick. Canucks put on quite a show last night.
Yeah, it was a good game, start to finish, pretty much. We've been asking for that, and I think we got that finally. Whether it was the infusion of JT back in the lineup that kind of got them a little bit of extra juice, couple of things, but yeah, it was good from start to finish. Lankanen was good again, but overall result was there. Guys were producing.
What, you mentioned JT playing his first game. Like, what stood out to you with his first performance?
Well, first thing you look to see if there's any rust on him. Is he losing his battles? Is he a step behind? Is his passes missing? And he seemed like he was pretty on point from the beginning. He was still good in the circle. Picks up a couple of points. Plays tough matchups. So, again, he hasn't been injured, obviously. We don't know how much he's been training, working out, skating while he's been away. He obviously hasn't been playing a game for a month. But it didn't look like there was a lot of rust on him when he came back.
Yeah, and he grabs a couple of assists. You know, he makes plays that simply other players just can't. But also the other big thing is, like, it slots everybody else down. I don't think it's a complete coincidence that the fourth line ends up getting a couple of goals last night too, as everybody else is just slotted more into matchups that they have a chance of winning.
Yeah, it is. Again, you always have the next man up mentality whenever somebody goes down. But there are certain players in the lineup that you can't fill those shoes. And that's obviously one of them. So they did an admirable job. They collected a lot of points, tough road trip and all these things. So the team hung in there. But again, Florida is a statement game. Florida is a team that they're the champions. They're sitting well in their division. They're their team that are looking to make some noise again. So you needed a response. And we haven't seen a lot of those games won from a Vancouver standpoint. They won a lot of games. They had to win against weaker opponents. But as soon as we run into these teams that are at the top of the pecking order, that's when they had a hard time. So it was nice to see them finally get one of these.
Yeah, it was. And as far as their overall team game, how much of a difference do you think it makes when you had JT, you had Forbort, and they were able to forecheck better, defend better? Is it as simple as just getting a couple of guys back in that allows you to slot your lineup into place?
Well, JT puts everybody in their place. There's no question about that. All of a sudden, you're not Petey, DeBrusk, and Besser anymore. now you can spread the wealth a little bit, and you can put Brock back with JT and Petey and DeBrusk. So now you have two lines you have to match up against when you play against Vancouver. So that's the biggest one right off the bat. Pulling another center in means now you can run your four centers, your four very good centers in JT, Petey, Suter, and Bluger, which you can argue that the way they've been playing both Bluger and Suter, they can switch in and play in the top six if needed. But now they're anchoring their own lines, which means those lines will be that much more heavier to play against. And hopefully, and like they did, they tilted the ice. Garland and Suter and Joshua didn't score tonight, correct me if I'm wrong, but they played well. They were heavy on the forecheck. They were creating chances. They were involved. You saw Joshua being physical. He had a couple of nice looks right in the slot. The fourth line chips in a couple of goals. When they do that, you're going to win a ton of games, a ton of games. Top six still need to do their part, and they did. But now you're not looking at one line or three or four guys to get the job done anymore. Now it's a team job, and that makes it that much easier on everybody.
Well, and no forward ended up playing more than 17 minutes last night. You know, like, it was the ultimate, like, we can roll all four lines kind of game.
Yeah, it's... I wouldn't say that the top six guys aren't always liking that. You say that's nice, but it's like they want their ice time. And again, sometimes, like, the fourth line now, if all of a sudden you start chipping in 14, 15 minutes, you're huffing and puffing. You're not used to that. So, like, you like to stay in your normal rhythm. That's not meaning that you have to play, like, some close games and overtime. You see your top six, JT, PD, Brock goes into, like, 22, 23, 24. That's too much as well. So don't get me wrong. But again, it's nice for the sense that you can not rest guys, but you're definitely not taxing guys. And it's been one of the conversations we've been having. How hard can you ride these guys? It's obviously still Quinn who's getting ridden a ton because Hronek is out. But the forward is a little bit different. They're a little easier to overuse a forward in how the game works. These are a little easier to protect. And when I say protect, Quinn's 30-minute can be protected in the sense that if it's offensive zone minutes, power play and this stuff, they're not as taxing. Where if you start running really heavy on forward centers, they're forechecking, they're backchecking, they're battling the corners, they're battling on the offensive zone, that there's no easy minute where these can have easy minutes, if you will.
Rick Tocchet called it an identity game afterwards, and we haven't seen a lot of those this year, but it did feel a lot more like last year. Good forecheck, and even when they were under duress at times, you know, they protected the middle of the ice. It just it felt like they got back to their identity last night.
I'd pause on that until they do it a couple more times here. We got Boston coming in, which is obviously a big game as well. So show it a couple more times, and then you can start convincing me your identity is back. Right now they've gotten the results they needed. You'd still like them winning more games more consistently. Last night looked like a team that could play with the best in the league, and that's been missing. So yeah, it was a ginormous step in the right direction, as long as they don't fall back to what we've seen in the past couple of weeks, months.
Yeah, and I think that we all want to see it really build, and especially through Boston and Colorado games, some tough opponents coming in, and seeing that game really build and really go in the right direction. I did want to get your thoughts on Max Sasson a little bit with the way he was able to score, get a couple points last night, and now has 4 points in 9 games as he's played, and being a bit more direct. I love how he drove towards the net on the first goal and dished it off to Carson Soucy. Are you seeing some growth in the young player's game?
I'd throw him in. We've seen Baines, we've seen Lekimäki a little bit, and we've seen Saxon, some young players that are developed in Abbotsford. And I'd say Saxon, what he has going for him is the burst of speed. It's the skating. You always hear the mantra, if you can skate, you can play. And his skating is at a level to where he can play in the league. Does the head, the skills and that stuff keep up? We will find out. But he seems a step ahead of the other guys that have been called up simply because he's fast enough. There was a great example yesterday, and it got shown on the highlights as well. He's a couple steps behind either a forward or a D-man on the left side, and he blow by him and creates a scoring opportunity. It's one of those things that you can't teach. can't teach guys to skate faster. Either you have it or you don't. And again, he has it, and it means that he can separate himself. Now we're talking, does the skill, the finesse, the head, does that keep up with the rest of it? Time will tell. But pure skills, he has the skating to play in this league, and that's what's been able to get him in some situation and producing as well.
We saw the mix on defense work a lot better last night, and I don't think it's a coincidence that Derek Forbert was back in the lineup, but that's still an area the team is going to look at upgrading. You know, we're hearing that maybe they're going to look for Vincent Desharnais to get a change of scenery here, as it hasn't worked out through the first couple of months. Is a defender still the biggest priority for this team in your eyes?
It's the only priority right now. That's the only thing you need. You need somebody who can slot in behind Quinn and Hronek. Forbert, you didn't see him. You didn't notice him, which is great. That's what you want for those. That's what Cole did all last year. So it's good to get him back in and doing that. But it is still a glaring hole. And Desharnais needs a fresh start, a new start. Edmonton wasn't the right place either. You're starting to run out of situation options now. You need to go look for it. But again, you don't have to stress it, and it doesn't have to be a panic move, because the team is playing well enough. You're winning games. You're in a playoff spot where you want to be. So you can take your time and you can find the right player, preferably somebody who's going to be here for the long haul. But there's no question you're very thin on D, very, very thin on D, and Quinn can carry a ginormous load here, but he's going to need help come April 12th, 10th, when the playoff rolls around.
Yeah, and I think when you look at how the Canucks have defended without Philip Hronek as part of the team, it's been a little bit tougher now. Obviously, you talk about Forbert coming in, and really he helped things out. But when you know your back end is somewhat undermanned, how much more pressure and focus does that require from the forwards to make sure that you make up that gap?
Yeah, but I don't like the thing is, Hronek is injured, but they were thin when he was in the lineup.
100%. It's just more about how do you live through the moment,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So it's like it becomes too much of a mental burden if you start worrying, RD is weak. So, like, they have NHL Ds on this team. So don't get me wrong. There's just the hole is too big from Quinn and Hronek to Susie if he's the best Nets defenseman. So Susie could play on a second pairing if his partner is somebody who can anchor that pairing. But if he's anchoring it with Tyler Myers or Desharnais or Brännström or Juulsen and something like that, then this second pairing becomes a little bit underwater when you're starting to see the Draisaitls or whoever comes after MacKinnon or these second lines that are still good scoring, where you need a little bit more defensive presence, if you will, better defensemen than what you have. So you have an abundance of bottom pairing defense, and they can fill in admirably. So it's not like you're looking when you go into this game, it's like, oh, what is this lineup and all these guys, they should be in the mind. No, these are all NHL players. They just got a little bit too much ice time and a little bit too much out of their depth when they're playing second pairing minutes, which can run into the 20s real fast, especially now. So that's the only issue. So it's not like you're looking at the decor and say, oh, this is a bad decor. No, you have a lot. It's just you need a little more quality.
You were on the team with maybe the best goalie tandem in Canucks history, and Roberto Luongo and Corey Schneider. And not to say that Lankinen and Demko are going to be able to replicate that, but you're starting to get a feeling that, like, now that Demko's back, Canucks are going to have that option where no matter who's in net, you have a high level of confidence no matter who's back there.
Yeah, it was good to see. Obviously, Lankinen, that game speaks for itself, so don't need to dive into that too much. Demko, again, that was the first game back in, what, 7-8 months, which is a lifetime for a goalie, you'd say.
Yeah.
So it was good for him to come back. And, yeah, would you have liked him to win the game? Of course. What I took from it was you're down 3-2 going into the third. Now your goalie needs to give you a chance to win the game. And he did that. They pressured. They gave up chances. grade A scoring chance, and he kept them in there. They got the tying goal. You got a chance to win it, and then you lose it at overtime. But that's really all you can ask from your goaltender. So, yeah, would we have liked to save more here and there from on the first three goals? Of course. But when push comes to shove, he gave them a chance to win. And that's what you expect from him. And he will become better, more practicing, more games and all these things. And you probably won't have to tax him as you've done in the last 5 or 6 years, because Lehkonen have proven it now that you can rotate these guys. You can keep them fresh. You can plan out their games a month in advance, if you will. Granted, nobody gets hurt, of course, and say, hey, you're playing here, here, and here. Your practice is going to look like this and this. Goalies are creature habits, maybe more so than players, because of the way they prepare for games and need to know it the day before and get into their whole routine. So it will become that much more easier for them knowing this. And on the side of this, you're not taxing them either, because you're building in rest. It's not like Lehkonen where you say, hey, you got to play every game, because you don't play, we don't win, kind of thing.
Now, Yannick, as far as things go with locker room dynamics and, you know, how players and relationships are, especially when it comes to star players, we talk about how oftentimes in any situation, you don't have to be best friends with the people that you work with, but you have to be able to get along and at least be able to be professional and work together. When you looked at the best locker rooms you were a part of, what was that dynamic like? And is it so much about respecting one another, but also having big players with big personalities being able to get the best out of each other as well?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. The best dressing room. You can't have cliques. That's the biggest thing. You can't have three guys sit in this corner, six in that corner, a bunch of floaters here and there. The team has to get along. Like you said, you don't have to go out for dinner and hang out with on your off days with everybody. But you can have cliques. After that, obviously, you need a little bit of everything. You need some guys to keep it light in there. Somebody who will pull some stunts, because it's a long season. So it's nice to have some smiles. Whatever it be, guys have to be able to take it too. But again, it comes back to when the game is played, Do we play for each other? Or do we play for ourselves? And if you can answer that question from all 23 individuals, then you know what kind of dressing room you have. As soon as players start playing for themselves, and it's not glaringly obvious, but you players notice when players play for themselves. And that's the biggest deterrent from having a great dressing room when you start getting this the selfishness that comes in. And it can be shown in a lot of different ways, whether it's on the ice, what you do, how you carry yourself, how you take care of yourself, which is kind of like one of those things where you're not preparing yourself the best possible way to play based on what you do on your off days or night before. Those things comes into account as well. So like I said, there's a lot of things that goes into having a good dressing room.
Yannick, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
There is Yannick Hansen, Friday analyst here on Canuck Central. You also hear him Tuesdays on The People Show. A lot there. Yannick's right. A little bit of a loaded question, but it's necessary in times like these with the stories that have been around the Vancouver Canucks for as long as they have. But end of the day, they've found a way, specifically with Miller and Pettersson. Like, it worked for large parts of last year, and it has worked to the point where both of these players ended up earning massive extensions with this team. So we've seen it work, and that's not to say it hasn't been working, but you've got to find a way to manage the relationship, as we've talked about earlier in the show, and that's an ongoing process, it would appear, for the Vancouver Canucks. Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Still more to come. We've got your mailbag questions coming up here on the show with the Boston Bruins in town tomorrow night. Couple of interesting names on waivers today.
Oh, yes. Your boy is on waivers.
Pierre Engvall?
Well, no, the other guy.
I don't want to take on Pierre Engvall's contract, no. Although I like him as a player, even though like he's long and lanky and doesn't hit anything because, well, I don't know.
Hey, Dan, the Canucks are trying to move Desharnais. The Canucks are also trying to trade for a forward.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't the Engwall Desharnais swap right there to be had? I just jest.
Do the does Patrick Waugh like? You know what? It doesn't matter if Patrick Waugh likes Vincent Desharnais because Lou Lamoriello will trade for him anyway.
Yeah, I would not take on an Engwall contract. Just the tongue firmly placed in cheek.
Yeah, yeah. But Oliver Wahlstrom is also on waivers. 11th overall pick. Look, the numbers aren't pretty. This looks like an 11th overall pick. Like, you know, if you're sitting around chatting bleep with your buddies, you know, and be like, man, that guy's a bust. he's got 2 goals this year, two goals last year, and like 40 games ish played. It hasn't gone well for Wahlstrom, who, you know, I thought had a world of talent going into his draft year. And even early in his career, we saw him put up better numbers than he's put up recently with the Islanders. Really, to me, still an interesting name on the waiver wire. Not one I necessarily expect the Canucks to do much with.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I don't know where his game is at. I will say, though, in the 2018 draft, I was very high on Oliver Wahlstrom. So back, you know, during those years, I used to host Prospect Central.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of prospect work, right? Like myself, Ryan Beach was on that show, Cam Robinson, the three of us. Beach is now with the organization. We used to watch, you know, tons of tape, those guys especially. But, you know, I was a big part of what I did. And I loved Oliver Wahlstrom. I had him super high on that draft, right? Like I was super high on Quinn Hughes that year. I loved Philip Zadina.
Yeah.
Zadina Wahlstrom, two guys I love. Not great.
Oh.
Not great. Not great. Hasn't quite
worked
out. No wonder
SAT doesn't work in a scouting department.
No wonder. Exactly.
Huh?
But I loved Quinn Hughes. Yeah. I will say I loved Quinn Hughes and I loved Brady Tkachuk in that year's draft. Like those two guys I was really, really high on as well. And I just
really
couldn't
going
believe.
Out on a limb with those two guys. Jeez.
But hey, but dude, it's easy to say now. It's
like
easy
Rasmus
to say
Dahlin
now.
Too?
Did you guys not forget? Well, I mean, you guys
what
not forget.
What about Svechnikov? You think he's a good player? Okay.
Do you guys not remember with Brady? How people thought he was overrated. How people thought Ottawa taking him at four over Zadina was hearsay and it was ridiculous. Yeah. They couldn't believe that they took Brady Tkachuk that high.
He had 8 goals in college, and people are like, "What is the upside on this guy?" I have no idea.
100%. And I was like, "You got to watch this guy play. He's legitimate. Like he's fantastic." And Quinn Hughes, people are like too small.
Yeah.
You know, he shouldn't be going top three, top five. He's too tiny. I
mean, what does Ken Holland think of Quinn Hughes?
I have receipts of people saying Noah Dobson and Evan Bouchard way ahead of Quinn Hughes. So, I mean, it's easy to say now.
Yeah.
But if we go back to the trenches, when we were fighting in the trenches, those wars.
All right. Jeez, I was just poking the bear a little bit, man. I didn't expect the bear to come out like this, but apparently, yes. Oliver Wahlstrom, though, an interesting name.
Yeah.
Just maybe not one for the Vancouver Canucks. All right. Coming up, the mailbag here on Canucks Central. Your questions for us on the program next on Sportsnet 650. Should tell you that this hour of Canucks Central was brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Now that I've thrown a curveball at Arash, let's take the break. Canucks Central.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.